Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
The rockets will speak for themselves, the words of Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, who was speaking as reports circulated claiming Joe Biden has at long last allowed Ukraine to use powerful long-range missiles in its war against Russia. So what impact could this have on the conflict? Well, here to discuss this, I'm joined on the line by Shashank Joshi, who's defence editor with The Economist, and thank you for being with us this morning. So we know,
Good morning to you.
Joe Biden has long resisted calls, we know, to allow Ukraine to use these weapons, the army tactical missile systems, against Putin and his troops. Why do you believe he has, apparently it would seem, changed his mind?
It would seem this is driven primarily by North Korea's involvement in the war, particularly in Kursk province, which is, of course, that part of Russia that was attacked by Ukraine back in August. And North Korean forces are flooding in to help Russia retake it. I think Western officials are very concerned that this could become a steady supply of North Korean troops rather than just a one-off deployment. They're very keen to show North Korea that this is going to go badly for them. This will be met with high costs. This will be a really bad idea. And using these missiles in Kursk is probably one way to signal that. The irony or the difficulty for Ukraine, perhaps, is that that may be the most politically logical place to use the weapons, but it isn't necessarily where the most attractive Russian targets over the border actually are.
Where are they?
Well, all along, really, but basically these are the appeal of this weapon system is that it's range. It can go 300 kilometres. It's one of the longest range Western systems that Ukraine has in its inventory. And so the point is you hit things in the rear of the battlefield, the rear meaning well behind the front lines. And that's higher value things such as arms depots, logistics hubs, railway stations, barracks, depots, command posts. Those are the things they want to hit to sap Russia's combat power. And actually, Kursk is not the focus of those. You can see them over the border in places like Belgorod, across the border in other provinces. And so we'll wait to see whether Ukraine is allowed to strike more widely beyond Kursk or whether it will be confined in that region.
And would you expect that they will be confined to Kursk?
It's hard to say at the minute. I think the expectation is that, yes, initially they would be. And not only that, but they'll also be probably prevented from hitting certain sorts of targets. I can't imagine the Americans are very keen on, for instance, Ukraine hitting anything that looks like a civilian target, even if it's something Russia's hitting in Ukraine. So, for instance, the power grid or oil refineries. I also think America will be very hesitant to allow Ukraine to strike extremely sensitive targets like those associated with nuclear weapons. So, for instance, Russian early warning radars that give the Kremlin an early sight of incoming ballistic missiles. I think America will say, you can't touch those. The key point here is that I think each target's going to be vetted quite closely by the White House. This isn't simply a free-for-all saying, you know, have at it, go for it.
So the big concern in the United States about deploying the weapons, Shashank, is how Vladimir Putin might respond. And we've already had some comments from the Kremlin this morning on this. What options do you think the Russian president might be considering on foot of this decision, impending decision by Joe Biden?
I think that part of the answer is that he's going to be really looking to find ways. Putin will be looking to find ways to extract symmetrical cost to say, you know, you've done this, let's see what I can do in response that matches this. And I think the concern over nuclear weapons use has always been overblown. It's really, that was a situation most of greatest concern when Russia's army was on the back foot, extremely weak. I think the much bigger concern right now is Russia providing advanced missile systems to America's adversaries. And that could include, for instance, Iran. But more importantly, I think it would probably include the Houthis in Yemen, the rebel group that's currently firing at international shipping, because that would be a way for Putin to extract a cost and say, I'm doing exactly what you did to me.
Right. So this could end up in a really dreadful situation. So it's a huge risk that America is taking if they go down this route. Do you think it was the involvement then of the North Korean troops in Kursk that finally pushed the Americans into this position?
I'd say, first of all, it's a risk, not a huge risk. And there's also a risk in inaction, given that we've just seen steady Russian escalation, not least the weekend's massive air attacks, which were the second largest since September 2022. And I just wanted to state that clearly. But I think, you know, what we'll continue to see, you know, is that this was the right decision, because fundamentally they, you know, it wasn't just North Korea. It was also a sense in the White House, perhaps, that Putin may be a little bit restrained from escalating if he feels Donald Trump is coming into office next month or in 2 months' time, and that he wants to leave open the prospect of a deal with Trump. And therefore, if he simply escalates wildly in response, he will close that window. And we know, have some indication from the American press that Trump may have told Putin on a call not to escalate. I think, therefore, that consideration, the knowledge that Putin is anticipating Trump and may be restrained in response, may also have shaped his calculus and his decision-making on this, as well as North Korea's involvement.
Of course, Donald Trump could come in, as you say, in 2 months' time and reverse this decision, the one that has been taken by Joe Biden, we believe.
He could. He certainly expected to perhaps limit or cut aid to Ukraine as part of an effort to secure a deal. But he could also change these permissions. I think the hope is that by then, over the 2 month period, remember that America doesn't have vast stocks of attackums that it's given to Ukraine. You know, the Pentagon is eager to keep these for itself as well, because they are active part of its war plans, particularly in places like the Korean Peninsula against North Korea. And so the hope, I guess, is that they can do quite a lot of damage to Russian capabilities before January 20th. So even if Trump reverses policy, maybe they'll have burnt through the stock of attackums by then and done something useful with them. Just to give you an example of that, remember that in September, Ukraine used its own indigenous drones or missiles to hit a Russian arms depot at Toropets, and that took out what is estimated to be, in my understanding, about 3 to 4 months of Russian ammunition. That's a huge amount. So if they can inflict similar damage on the Russian war machine prior to January 20th, even if Trump then changes his mind and puts a halt to this, I think they'll still have considered that something of an achievement.
Yeah, because a lot can happen within the 2 months if they do have this permission. And then, of course, there's the question of Britain and France then as well. In particular, are they likely to row in behind this decision? And then you would see Ukraine's firepower drastically increase, with all three countries allowing them to go ahead with this strategy.
Yes, Britain and France have provided their own cruise missiles called Storm Shadow and Scalp, respectively. And they are cruise missiles, which means that they fly sort of through the atmosphere in rather flat trajectories, unlike ATACMS, which are ballistic missiles. In other words, they go kind of up and down like in a ballistic arc. And so they're different weapons, they have different strengths. But Britain and France have been reluctant to fully authorize Ukraine to use these without American backing. That's partly because these weapons are not just ones you give to Ukraine and say, go for it. They're ones that require active assistance in targeting and mission, what's called sort of mission planning. So it's been seen as a riskier step. My guess is that yes, Paris and London will now allow Ukraine to use these weapons with American support. They've also got very limited numbers of these weapons. There really aren't that many of them, even much smaller amounts than ATACMS. They are very, very scarce, and there aren't many more to give from British and French stockpiles. So I suspect, yes, we probably will see European missiles follow the American ones.
But that's a different prospect if they need, as you've explained, their active assistance in order to be effective, because Vladimir Putin could then point to Britain and France and say, well, now you are properly involved here. This changes the calculus for me in terms of how I respond.
He could, and he has. You know, he's explicitly said this would be direct involvement. The problem is that a few things. One is he's already said that in the past for other things, and we know that the West has provided Ukraine with lots of intelligence, and Russia has said, well, you're helping, you're a belligerent, you're participating in this war. So he's already made that claim repeatedly, and therefore it's lost a little bit of force. And I think the other point is that he has already seen ATACMS attacks and Storm Shadow attacks in Crimea, which Russia claims is Russian. It claims it is inalienable Russian soil. We know it's not. We know it's Ukrainian and is occupied by Russia. But that's what the Kremlin feels. And when ATACMS and Storm Shadow and other Western missiles struck there, presumably with assistance from the West, Putin did nothing. Mm-hmm. And so those threats, without meaning to dismiss them, because I think they ought to be considered seriously and interrogated, and we need to think about them very carefully, they've lost some of their compelling force when they've been repeated and they've become cheap talk over a period of many months and years.
So then, given all of this and putting it all into context and looking at it in the round, Shashank, I mean, where do you see this going over the coming months as we head very quickly now towards the Trump presidency?
I think that, frankly, Trump wants a deal. And the only question is he going to allow Putin to dictate terms, or is he willing to use leverage to force the Kremlin to the table and to negotiate a serious deal that would give Ukraine guaranteed security in the long term? And I'm afraid to say I'm fairly sceptical on that point at present.
Shashank, thank you very much for your time. Shashank Joshi there from The Economist. Now, coming up next with the first TV leaders' debate of this election coming up tonight here on RTÉ1 television, we will have the big issues from the campaign trail next.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTÉ Radio 1.